Our first case is Department of Revenue versus Public Service Company. Argument is set for an hour. Justice Marquez will not participate in this case. Both attorneys ready?
Yes.
Petitioner will have to keep track of his time. Just a couple other housekeeping matters. One is when you get up to the podium, please tell us who you are and who you represent. And secondly, some of us use iPads, and we have our briefs and our notes and our links to Westlaw, so we're not surfing and using it with that. Let's get started.
May it please the court, I'm Dan Domenico representing the petitioners. If this court is convinced that Colorado's legislature clearly and unambiguously intended to include the generation and transmission of electricity within the concept, the statutory, not necessarily scientific concept, of tangible corporeal personal property, then it should rule in favor of the plaintiffs. But if it can't reach that unequivocal conclusion, if it either agrees with the department that when the legislature of Colorado wants to deal with electricity for sales tax purposes, it does so separately and distinctly from the generic imposition of tax on tangible personal property, or if it simply harbors some doubt about where on the sometimes fuzzy line between tangible and other than tangible the legislature intended for electricity to fall, then those doubts in this case have to be resolved against the parties seeking an exemption and in favor of the department. Now, the relevant language in this case, again, the heart of the case is about the concept, the legal concept of tangible corporeal personal property. The specific tax exemption in this case is in section 26709, which could have been written broadly enough to include the plaintiffs, but it wasn't. It could have included all machinery. It could have said anything used to produce something taxed under section 104, but it didn't. It specifically tied this tax break to certain types of manufacturing, certain types of machinery used to produce things taxed only under one part of section 104, 104A. 104A imposes a sales tax on sales of tangible corporeal personal property. 709 explicitly ties the exemption to that tax. Now, that tax that's in 104.1A now has been in Colorado sales tax since its original imposition in 1935. And it may be helpful to go back and look at the 1935 Act, because while all the relevant language and structure is still there today, it's been obscured perhaps a little bit by additions and rearrangement and deletions and repeal, but the basic structure is still there. The 35 Act in section 4, what's now section 26104, started with a tax on tangible personal property. Then section B imposed another tax on services essentially provided by utilities. So B was a tax on telephone, telegraph, gas, and electric service. You still see that today in section 104. Section 1A is the tax on tangible personal property. Section D1 now is the tax on electricity. C is an extensive discussion of tax on telecommunication services. So the same structure is still there, and it's been there since 1935. Now, the plaintiffs want to ignore that history. They want to ignore the fact that the legislature treats electricity separately, focus on electrons. But we have to step back from the electrons, from the leaves, branches, molecules, and see the forest here. The legislature, whatever you or I or electrical engineering professors might think of the nature of electricity, the legislature understands that it's somehow different, and it treats it differently. So you see throughout the Sales Tax Act, not just in 104, but throughout it, electricity, when the legislature wants to address it, it does it separately. Section 102, the definition section, 10, defining a sale, and this was in the 135 Act 2. The definition of a sale includes two definitions: sale of property, sale of electricity. Section 102.20 and 21, discussing wholesale sales, treat sales of tangible personal property and sales of electricity and other inputs separately. Section 709 itself has recently had a tax break added to cover essentially this period from 2001 to 2006, where the department took the erroneous position that the plaintiffs advocate today. The legislature explicitly addressed it. 26.724, the legislature now has a separate tax break for certain types of machinery used to generate electricity, but not the kind at issue here. Machinery only used to generate electricity from renewable resources. So the legislature knows how to address electricity. It does so repeatedly throughout the Sales Tax Act, and it does so separately from the imposition on tangible corporeal personal property. Now, the lower courts, I think, were thrown off in this case by a couple things. Number one, they seem to think that what they had before them was a science fair project and not a legal inquisition about legislative intent. And while the science, I think, is basically not in dispute in this case, how to characterize it is, and that is a legal question. That is a pure legal question. The Court of Appeals, I think, began with the right approach, but failed to apply the proper presumptions in this case. So the Court of Appeals failed to defer to the Department of Revenue's views on this, its narrower interpretation, and it failed, just as importantly, failed to apply the presumption against expansive readings of tax exemptions. Either of those would point against the result that was reached below.
Well, it is pretty interesting, you know, how it comes into the home, but your point is that this is a service that is taxed, and it's separate from the other scheme, and that there is a comprehensive design having to do with the sale of electricity.
That's right, Your Honor. The common understanding, certainly the common understanding in 1935, when this language and this structure was added to the sales tax, was that whatever the nature the physicists might say about electricity, it's worth noting in 1937, the Nobel Prize in Physics was awarded for recognition of how the electron moves. And so in 1935, whatever it is, whatever the nature of how it gets into the home, we're going to treat it separately because it's distinct enough that it deserves its own separate treatment. It's called public service company for a reason. The PUC, the rate schedule for public service companies, says these are the rates you pay for. The title of the document is Rate Schedule for Electric Service. This is just how it's understood in common parlance, and the legislature should be assumed to have understood it that way. And in fact, especially when they go out of their way, it's not as if they just didn't address it at all. They explicitly, in 1935, which is still in our act today, have a section dealing with electricity. So there's no need to treat it as tangible personal property. They treated it differently. However, a judge might think, or a physicist or an electrical engineer might think, the General Assembly separately treats electricity in the sales tax.
Whether they produce a service or not, pretty clearly they do, delivering something, and that may be taxed separately. But is the question for us, posed by your opponents, whether the thing they produce, and they, I take it you all even agree, they generate something or produce something, whether the thing they produce is property, tangible property, and if so, whether the machinery that produces it is entitled to the exemption.
Yes, Mr. Monk, tell us how to define that term. Same question.
I think that's almost right. It's not what you and I might think they produce property. It's what the General Assembly, and how the General Assembly intended to treat it. Again, they
but we have
that
to define that. Today.
Define.
It's one thing to talk about history and science.
Sure.
But we have a legal case, we have to define it. So tell
sure.
us how.
So,
what do you suggest that we write the words mean?
Right. So the General Assembly Well, I think in this case, actually, it's fairly easy. Anything listed separately, treated separately under Section 104 now, Section 4 of that 35 Act, was not considered by the General Assembly to be tangible personal property. They were imposing a
service. So basically, you're saying we don't have to.
I don't think you have to.
We don't have to get into the.
The structure and text of the Act make it clear that those listed things were not considered to be taxed under Section A. Now, if you do want to try to get into some sort of a scientific definition, the beginning of that is provided for by corporeal. That the Court of Appeals seemed to think that that was just a waste of the legislature's time and has no meaning other than tangible. But at the time it was introduced into the Act, I think that's a misunderstanding. Corporeal was, in fact, meant to have some meaning. And it's, I guess, a little bit ironic to be here on Halloween talking about incorporeal things, but it wasn't meant to be talking about ghosts or spirits. It had, at that time, something of a scientific understanding, which was there are forces, phenomena, at work in the real physical world, gravity, magnetism, light, electricity, that are real in that sense. And yes, if you take a really broad understanding of the word tangible, might be tangible to one or more senses, but are sort of phenomena that work in something other than a corporeal manner. Corporeal at the time, I think, was meant to be something you could pick up, move, carry around. And incorporeal was something else. It might be real, it might be tangible in the sort of the broadest possible meaning, but they meant to mean something else.
Well, corporeal comes from a Latin word, corpus, meaning body.
A body, right. And so, but at the time, I think there was this distinction between things that operated by moving a body that you and I just did in general conversation, a book or a desk, something we can move that has a body like that, a form, versus something like a ghost, perhaps, is a good way to think about it. It's real in the imagination, but it doesn't have a body. It can change its shape. Electricity fits that. Einstein at the time was writing about this concept of the ether, that where these forces might operate. So I think there may have been that sense. The legislation, it had a body, something you could move. And if you look at the 35 Act, which again is what's been incorporated into our current Act, you see the separate, the things that were treated differently from tangible, corporeal, personal property might share that kind of concept of there's just something weird about it, and you don't end up with a thing you can carry around at the end of it. So telephone, telegraph service, gas, electric, even oddly enough, and this one I think for us may be the hardest to conceive of, the restaurant discussion that's now in 104E was actually in that original Act. But what's distinctive about restaurant service is you don't end up carrying something around with it. And I think that at the time they just had this different meaning and they wanted to specifically cover those things.
Could I ask one follow-up question?
Please.
Apart from the service, apart from taxing the service of delivery energy or electricity, do we separately tax energy or electricity itself as we tax corporeal or tangible property?
The only imposition of tax on a sale of electricity is from 104D1. Now and let me make this clear actually. So those of you who live in Denver, for example, will look at your bill and there will be a tax on the entire bill. But that's because Denver has imposed separately its own sales tax, both, and it looks a lot like the 35 Act, has a section on tangible property, and then a separate section explicitly taxing utility services. And the entire thing is taxed as a service, but it's explicitly done, just like in the 35 Act. One important point, in the 35 Act, domestic energy consumption was taxed. In 1979, at the same time the legislature was enacting the machinery exemption, it exempted domestic energy use. It pulled the domestic part out of D1, And so that's why the state now doesn't tax your electricity bill, but Denver, if you live in Denver, does, because they have their own separate tax.
We're talking about a statewide tax on commercial.
Right, so D1 now only applies, only says commercial electricity. Before 1979, from 35 to 79, it said commercial and domestic. That was pulled out in 79 at the time, and part of what I think confused the district court is, at the same time that what's now 26.715, which is an exemption for all forms of domestic energy, heat, so it's not just an electricity provision, it provides, it discusses gas, coal, firewood, coke, oil, anything someone might use to heat or power their home, the legislature wanted to exempt that. At the same time, they pulled out of what's now D1, the domestic. So the statewide tax, yes, is only on commercial energy consumption. But it's the whole thing. It's not split up. Your bill will have it on, a commercial bill will have it on the entire bill. Does that answer your question, Justice Coates? I'm not sure it does.
Sort of.
Thank you.
Well, I'm happy to, if there's some.
Let me clarify. Narrow it down just slightly then. We've provided an exemption here, a special treatment of machinery that produces tangible property. Do we provide separately for machinery that produces energy?
Not in that, well, take a careful look. Let me be careful about this. In 709, in response essentially to the sort of change in the department's treatment. So from 1935 to 2001, the department shared this view that I'm advocating today, the same view they have now, that electricity is not tangible, corporeal, personal property, that the generation, equipment used to generate it does not qualify for this exemption. In 2001 through 2005, the department adopted the other position before correcting its error then in 2005. So now in 709, the legislature has provided for a specific exemption for these types of machines during that period, that were purchased essentially during that period while the department took the other position. So there is that specific exemption. There's also in 26.724 an exemption.
Could you say that again?
Yeah. Sure, and it's a little complicated. So
2001 to 2005,
all right,
it's a change in DOR's position.
So from all the way up until 2001, mm-hmm. nobody had thought to advocate the position, as far as I know. Nobody had taken the position that public service is taking there, which is frankly remarkable given that in 1979, when this provision was added, they were building a $500 million power plant in Brush. But then in 2001, they came and said, hey, we think we are manufacturing tangible personal property. We should be entitled to this tax break. And the department at that time agreed. Then a few years later, going through an audit, the department said, wait a minute, we took the wrong approach to this statute, went back through the final determination that's really at issue here now, recognized that was an error, and now has gone back to the pre-existing understanding that this is not tangible personal property.
But it seems to me you said something more, that the legislature reacted to that interpretation of the department.
So that's background of that.
Right.
In 2007-2008, the legislature, essentially recognizing that it might be unfair to public service or others who in that period might have invested in some very expensive equipment, so enacted a specific exemption covering equipment purchased and entered into for a long-term purchase agreement. It's right there in 709, I think 1A4, that equipment purchased during that period would be entitled to this tax break. At the same time, they enacted 26.724, which provides a specific tax break for equipment used to generate electricity but only from certain renewable resources. Essentially, wind and solar equipment is entitled to basically the exemption. Now, interestingly, they cut it off, the legislature cut that off clearly at the end of the plant, unlike the plaintiff's argument that they're entitled to this exemption for all their transformers and wires that run out through the city is all part of the, under their theory, part of their manufacturing process.
Council, can I just, before you move on, how does the fact that the department has changed its position play into your argument? I mean, why should we defer to you if you've not taken a consistent position?
Yeah, sure. Does estoppel run against the government?
Well, it's not estoppel, but it's how much deference we should say if you haven't gotten your...
This court has addressed that previously in Woodman, in the Woodman case, Woodman of the World case. In that case, the department had for decades allowed the plaintiffs in that case to claim an exemption from the 40s to the 90s, I think, and then changed it, recognized it was an error. This court said, look, perhaps we'll take a close look. I mean, if the court wants to make sure there's not some sort of nefarious political other reason for a change in policy.
Well, it wouldn't be nefarious. It's just how we defer to something that's changed.
Sure.
It's just the change.
The change, I mean, again, it's worth noting that the interpretation that the plaintiffs are asking the court to take was itself a change. The department is now back to its sort of long-standing position. But this court has recognized that the same sort of deference is due in those circumstances. Because the question isn't, should the executive branch be punished for changing its mind? The question is one of the proper role of the courts, and should the courts be stepping in to correct what they may view as an error, or should it be left to the political branches? And as long as the interpretation is one that is reasonably, arguably within the statutory definition, it should be deferred to.
Hold on. But I thought the reason we would defer is that you have some expertise, and you looked at this and came up with one answer, and then you looked at it again and came up with another answer, which tends to suggest the expertise was an exercise. I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm trying to get you to focus in on that.
It's a little shaky.
Well, there's no doubt the department changed its mind. But this court has recognized that adopting a rule that, well, we're not going to defer to you if you correct your error, is simply will discourage the correction of errors rather than taking a careful look. The department does have expertise in this area, but it's not a simple area, and reasonable people perhaps can disagree. In that case, both deference and perhaps more importantly, the presumption, even if you don't defer in this case, the presumption in this case is both a statutory and a common law presumption that an exemption has to be read, any doubt has to be read against the party seeking the exemption.
Yeah, and I guess I'm wondering if you rely on, back to the defer point, is that kind of conceding that there is ambiguity in the statute, or you can't win on the statutory language?
No, of course not. My view is that the statute looked at as a whole, step back, the legislature treats electricity differently from tangible personal property. But if reasonable people can disagree about that matter, then it's ambiguous sort of by definition. And by definition, then, the plaintiffs have to show that there's only one possible reading of the statute, and it's theirs. And they can't do that. Can I reserve the balance of my time, please?
You may.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Neil Pomerantz, bar number 24741, on behalf of the respondent, Public Service Company of Colorado. Court of Appeals correctly applied Colorado law to a factual record that is both clear and thorough. We therefore ask the court to affirm the decision below. I'd like to move immediately to why electricity is tangible personal property, and in doing so, I'll address a number of the issues that arose during Mr. Domenico's argument. Electricity is tangible personal property for at least four reasons. And the two that I want to start with have to do with the statutory definition and the department's regulation defining the term tangible personal property. We heard almost nothing about either one of them during Mr. Domenico's argument. The statutory definition defines tangible personal property as corporeal personal property. WACS defines corporeal as having a physical, material existence. Parties have stipulated that electrons are a building block of all matter. They are matter. Parties have further stipulated that electrons have mass, weight, that electricity can be felt, and of course that it can be felt. Those are all attributes of matter. Electrons form a part of the body of every atom, of every element in the world. Electrons and electricity surely have an objective, a physical, a material existence. They are corporeal and therefore tangible under the statutory definition.
Counsel, could I just get you to stop there and address Mr. DiNapa's argument that engineers might, or physicists may describe electricity in that way, but the legislature didn't understand it in that way, especially in the 30s. Can I just get your reaction to that?
Well, the basic principles of electricity have been known for hundreds of years, frankly. A number of the cases have recognized that while there's science involved in the question of how to characterize electricity, the basic principles have been known for a long time, and that we can't disregard basic science as we interpret the statutes. The legislature...
Well, yeah, how did the legislature... Yeah. Did the legislature understand, I guess, in your terms, basic science?
I think it was well known, certainly, by the 1930s, going back more than 100 years, certainly, that electrons were a part of every atom, that they have a body, that they have a real, a tangible existence. We've known that from the moment we get a shock of electricity, when we see the damage caused by lightning. We know that electrons and electricity are real. The legislature, when they enacted the statute, they used the term tangible personal property. In the 1970s, in 1979, when they used the term tangible personal property in the exemption statute, there was already a statutory definition for tangible personal property. The legislature defined it as corporeal personal property. And maybe even more importantly, 2 years before the legislature enacted the exemption statute, the department had enacted their own regulation defining the term. I think there's every reason to believe that when the legislature used that term tangible personal property in this exemption statute, that they were aware that the Department of Revenue had regulation, a detailed regulation interpreting the term, and that they had every expectation that that regulation would be used in applying the statutory language. That's the purpose of administrative agencies and the purpose of regulations, to give definitions to terms that are used in the statute.
Now that's really, it's all really interesting, but you know, this is a tax designed to spread out the cost of serving community through government, through spreading the burden of taxation. And it seems to me that service is what is being provided. I mean, we generally see electricity as electrical service.
Yeah, I want to address.
You're equating it to fear, but I just didn't get that at all. You know?
Okay, so there was a lot of discussion during Mr. Domenico's argument about Section 104, 3926-104, which is the statute that imposes a tax, the sales and use tax. He's correct that there is a separate subpart that deals with gas and electricity. What he didn't note, however, is that within that subpart, section D1, there's both a reference to gas and electricity and to gas and electric service, indicating that the legislature understood there was both a commodity aspect to the sale and a service aspect to the sale. In addition, the legislature, when it carved out specific transactions for special treatment within that same statutory section, it carved out other items. It carved out natural gas. Right? The department concedes that natural gas is tangible personal property. They've stipulated it's tangible personal property. It appears right next to electricity in that same subpart. There's no principled reason to treat the two differently. Restaurant food is given special treatment in that tax statute. There's no question that food and restaurant has a tangible quality. There's a service component to the transaction, to be sure. But there is also a commodity aspect to the transaction, the food itself. The same is true for electricity. Customers need the electricity. They need the energy content within that electricity, and they pay for it based upon the units of the commodity they consume. Those are the principal charges that the company is allowed to impose on its customers. Charges for the commodity,
based upon the units that are consumed. Is there a service aspect to it? There is a service aspect to it. The regulators acknowledge that there's a service aspect involved in metering and billing and repairs and troubleshooting, but the principal aspect of the transaction is a transfer of a commodity.
Can I interrupt at this point? Before you get too far from D1, I'm not understanding your distinction here. I've got D1 in front of me that seems to suggest for gas and electric service, etc., for gas and electricity. And you say that there's a difference there?
Right.
Could you go over that again? I'm not seeing that difference.
Okay. I think it's significant that the legislature did not just speak in terms of gas and electric service. They refer in the first clause to gas and electric service.
Whether furnished to whomever.
Yes.
For gas and electricity. For commercial consumption, mm-hmm. and not for resale. I mean, I just am not seeing a difference there. It seems like they're almost using the word electricity there just as shorthand for electric service, kind of a drafting sort of a problem or a shorthand.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I think they're discussing the two separate components of the sale, both for electricity and for natural gas.
Okay, well, let's assume for purposes of this argument, not to quibble over it, that you're right. How does that help you? Given that we have the whole other section that deals with tangible personal property and doesn't speak in these terms at all, at the very least, couldn't we assume that section D1 sort of covers the statutory intent or the statutory language with respect to gas, electric service, gas, and electricity? And should be read in the concrete distinction to tangible personal property?
Okay, so I think there were a number of reasons why gas and electricity
would you help me with that, if you will?
Needed to be given separate treatment. There is information that's provided in D1 that otherwise would not be found in subpart A. It tells us that only sales for commercial consumption are subject to tax. That would not be found within the general reference to tangible personal property in A. In addition...
No, wait, I'm not hearing that very well. You need to speak a little louder.
Okay,
And after you repeat that, perhaps you could explain it a little bit more. I actually didn't hear what you said.
Okay, so in subpart D1, my point is that they're providing additional information in subpart D1 that would not be found in the general reference to tangible personal property in subpart A. That's true for a number of the subsections of this statute. Okay, first of all, with respect to the natural gas and electricity, D1 is necessary to tell us that only sales for commercial consumption are subject to tax. You wouldn't get that from the subpart A reference. In addition, it tells us in those two different clauses, Justice Rice, that you referred to, that all aspects of the sale of gas and electricity are subject to tax, whether in the nature of a sale of commodity or in the nature of a service. And that's necessary because presumptively no services are subject to tax to the sales and use tax. Right? So this reference, this discussion is necessary to tell us that whatever the nature of the charge to customers when it comes to gas and electricity, it's subject to tax. So for example, the PUC allows the company to impose three different charges on its bills. Two of them have to do with the commodity. The two primary charges are based on the units of the commodity that are consumed. The third charge, though, is what's called the services and facilities charge, and it covers all the ancillary services that are provided by a public service company. This reference in D1 tells us that service charge is also part of the tax base. In the same way, it separately deals with the restaurant food in subpart E. That as well is necessary to tell us that the service components of that transaction are subject to tax in the same way as the charges that are associated directly with the food. So if you go to buy a meal and you pay $20 for the meal, maybe $10 has to do with the food itself, and the other $10 has to do with serving you the food, cleaning the table. But when you pay for a meal in a restaurant, the entire charge is subject to tax. Whether the nature of the commodity, food, or the service, the same here. And we need those separate subprovisions because otherwise that service element would not be subject to tax.
Counsel, can I just, before you move on, I thought part of your argument was since gas and electricity are kind of listed together, it helps you because the department treats gas as tangible personal property. Isn't that correct? correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Am I getting that?
No, there's no dispute in this case, and the department has stipulated that they treat natural gas as tangible personal property. They always have. They treat it as tangible personal property for purposes of the statutory definition, for purposes of their own regulation, and critically for purposes of this own, of this very exemption statute that we're discussing today, Section 709. And so I think that's further reason to conclude, given that everywhere in the statutes, everywhere in the statutory scheme that you see a reference to electricity, right next to it you see a reference to gas. There's no principled reason to treat the two differently. If gas is going to be treated as tangible personal property, as the Court of Appeals remarked, it surely is tangible personal property. There's no reason to treat electricity differently.
Well, I want to follow up on Justice Hobbs' question then, because where you see electricity, you also see the word service, electrical service, as opposed to property. And isn't that distinction important?
Okay, so I'd answer it in a couple of different respects. First, the any place you see the word service, and it's very rare, it appears in this section D1 that we've been looking at. The word service modifies both gas and electric, so it treats the two separately. But in the vast majority of cases where you see a reference to electricity in the statute, it doesn't use the word service. In 3926.102, I think it's subpart 21, they refer to gas and electricity without a reference to service, alongside all sorts of other fuel sources. Wood, coke, I forget the full list, but it's treated in the same way as other fuel sources that clearly are tangible personal property. If you look to section 3926.715 of the statute, you'll see multiple references in the subparts of that statute to electricity, not to electric service, but to electricity, again, together with all sorts of other fuel inputs. The reference to electricity in section 715, 3926.715, as we discussed in our briefs, is particularly significant because that subpart provides an exemption from the use tax for the use of electricity in certain situations. Exemption from the use tax. Now, the use tax by statute only applies to purchases of tangible personal property. It doesn't apply to services. So you wouldn't need any exemption for electricity unless it was contemplated by the legislature that electricity was a form of tangible personal property. And on very similar analysis, based upon exemptions like that in the statute, other courts have concluded that electricity is tangible personal property. The recent case out of the California Court of Appeals, the Sears Valley case, that was a case in which, among other reasons, the court concluded that electricity is tangible personal property because there was an exemption in there that applied only to items that were treated as tangible personal property for tax imposition purposes.
Could I ask you a question about gas and electricity in terms of the way they're measured for taxing purposes? Maybe this goes to the relationship of product versus service, but I'm not sure. Are they both measured in a comparable way for purposes of billing, taxing? That is, and what I have in mind is, can electricity be measured in terms of volume or weight, or is it merely in terms of the length of time that it's used or the effect it has? And is that the same for gas?
Electrons do have mass and weight. They are not charged to customers based upon the weight of the electrons. The charge is based on kilowatt hours. So the measuring stick to determine how much is going to be charged, how many units of the commodity are consumed, is kilowatt hours. That's very similar to the way the company charges for natural gas. Natural gas is charged based upon therms, which has a BTU, it's essentially measured by the amount of energy that is derived from the commodity that's delivered. So in that sense, the electricity and the natural gas are measured in similar ways, based upon energy content.
Okay, thank you.
I'd like to talk briefly about the department's regulation. We've talked about it just a little bit here. Again, the regulation went into effect in 1977. Is promulgated by the department pursuant to its delegated authority to promulgate regulations to assist in the interpretation of tax statutes. It's probably just 2 years before the exemption statute. There's every reason to believe the legislature was aware of it and intended that it be applied as a tool in interpreting the term tangible personal property as used by the legislature in the subject exemption statute. The legislature has never declared the regulation to be invalid. They've never declared it to be an inappropriate tool for measuring tangible personal property for purposes of this exemption statute. This court of appeals on many occasions have applied the regulation with approval in determining what tangible personal property is. And the Department of Revenue, until this case, has never suggested that its own regulation is inaccurate or incomplete in any way. We don't hear anything from the department. We didn't hear anything from Mr. Domenico about the department's own long-standing 35-year-old regulation defining the term. And the reason is because electricity clearly fits within its scope. That's undeniable. The regulation says the tangible personal property includes all goods, wares, merchandise, products, and commodities. All products, all commodities, no exceptions. The regulation does what any good regulation should do. It gives us certain bright line rules that we can apply in interpreting the statutory language. There's no question that electricity is both a commodity and a product. The parties are stipulated to that. So there's no question that electricity fits within the scope of the department's 35-year-old regulation defining the term tangible personal property. And I should say there as well that the department's taken an inconsistent position.
Mr. Congress, could you run by that a little bit slowly for me? I'm looking at the regulation you cited in the brief. And I thought that you admitted that electrons, you didn't generate electrons, right?
That's correct.
They're natural. So how does that fit? And also, I guess while you're talking about this, in the reply brief, at least Mr. Minico points out various scientific, inconsistencies, at least in terms of the idea that this that electricity is corporeal. So I wonder how do you fit that in?
Right. Okay. So let me start with the regulation. The regulation.
Yeah. How is it good?
I think under the UCC principles, I think it's been recognized as a good. Main focus in this case.
I don't think that's. No, I'm sure that's right. I don't question your UCC, but I don't think we're going to interpret a statute, a taxing statute, on the basis of the UCC.
Really, our point is that the regulation starts with five categories. And it says if you fit within any one of those categories, without more, your tangible personal property.
Right.
And it's the last two that are most significant in this case, products and commodities. It says all products and commodities are tangible personal property.
Well, if we think of electricity as a service and necessary for life, modern life, would you agree with that?
I don't agree with the conclusion that electricity is just a service.
Well, I understand. I understand you're an advocate, but the average person thinks of it as essential for functioning in life. I mean, we couldn't have any business, we couldn't do lots of things, right, without electricity.
The delivery of electricity is essential.
Okay. Like what must and Mr. Domenico pointed out the name of the former company was Public Service, right? So why is that fit, how does that fit into that definition?
Okay. Public Service performs a public service.
I hope so.
In preparing commodities for consumption by its customers.
Well, it's a lot different than you going out and purchasing an automobile or something, right?
I don't think so, Your Honor.
Really?
First of all, we produce natural gas as well.
We're not using natural gas. We're into electricity.
Right. It's one of the most valuable necessary commodities known to man. We need the commodity that otherwise would not exist but for the activities of this company. This position that we're espousing in this case is not unique. It is by far the majority rule across the country. The courts have consistently held that electricity is tangible personal property for any number of reasons, including the fact that it's a commodity. If you look at the seminal case in this area, the Curry case out of the Alabama Supreme Court.
That was quite a few years ago.
Quite a few years ago, and they had cited every single case today that addresses this issue. It's cited in the Sears Valley case from California just a few short years ago, and the Exelon case decided by the Illinois Supreme Court in 2009. Both of those cases cited the Curry case because it's the seminal discussion of what electricity is. One of the things that the Curry court concluded at first that it's a commodity, that electricity is a commodity. But they made the point that while electrons exist in nature, in a disorganized, powerless state, the commodity of electricity, the organized flow of electrons that have the capacity to do work, that is not the free gift of nature. That's the term they use. Those have to be produced. They have to be produced by a company like public service company, with complex machinery that frankly looks like any other industrial operation. Those electrons, in an organized stream, as we call a current, invested with the capacity to do work, what we call a voltage, those not exist. Those are real. Those are tangible. Those are commodities that would not otherwise exist. Is there a service aspect in delivering that current invested in voltage to customers? Yes, there's a service component. In the same way someone might deliver wood to your home, or forgive me, the natural gas, but ultimately at the end of the line, there's a commodity. There's something that contains that energy component, and that's the electricity.
Well, you're kind of getting into the area that was discussed in the answer brief for the reply brief, excuse me, about just how slippery some of these words are. I'm just looking at this reply brief and it suggests your expert said, for example, electrons have been created by nature so we cannot produce them. And you're saying that public service produces electricity. I understand, we can quibble about these words, but doesn't that demonstrate the slippery slope of referring to these sort of scientific arguments as opposed to a legal analysis?
I don't think we have to look at the science here. I think we can look at
But you were, in fact, asking us, if I understand your position correctly, to look at the science. That electrons might exist in nature, but they are manufactured in order for us to be able to consume them. And I'm not even sure about those words, but those seem reasonable. Mm-hmm. Isn't that the essence of your argument?
Yes. Electrons exist in nature in the same way raw materials in virtually every manufacturing process exist in nature. If I make a copper wire or a bracelet out of gold, those atoms of gold and copper, they exist in nature. But somebody has to collect those. Somebody has to organize those. Somebody has to invest them with properties that they didn't already have. There's nothing different about what's going on here. Instead of taking complete atoms, the company is taking a portion of the atom, the electron, and it's organizing them. And it's giving them properties that they didn't already have, that they wouldn't otherwise have without this company's activities. That's what makes it not terribly different from virtually any manufacturing process.
So is it your position, and just to extend this, that anytime someone takes something that occurs naturally in our environment and manipulates in any way, they create a tangible personal problem?
The tangible personal property exists before the manufacturing process begins. They exist by virtue of the electrons.
So the electron itself is tangible personal property, or the manipulated electron which creates electricity becomes tangible personal property?
Both, Your Honor. So that issue was discussed most recently in the Exelon case decided a few years ago by the Illinois.
Well, then I don't understand the distinction.
Right. So the court said, it started with the electrons and it says those are physical, those are material, they are an element of matter. And then it said that electricity consists of a stream of electrons. And so it consists of a stream of matter and therefore it too is a personal property. You also asked the question of, I think going to the manufacturing question, what makes this manufacturing? I think is ultimately where what you were asking. We have a definition of manufacturing statute. It talks about creating a product, article, substance, or commodity. Again, we have a product here, we have a commodity. And it has to be different from the inputs in name, character, or use. That's where we draw the line between activities that don't rise to the level of manufacturing and those that do. It has to be different in name, character, or use. Any one of those three metrics, but all three metrics are met here. Certainly, character of these electrons has changed markedly. by virtue of the company's machinery, and use, the usability has changed. Again, free roaming electrons, disorganized electrons, have no capacity to do anything. Once they are organized, once they are vested with these additional properties by the company, they have a different use. They have the, maybe the most important use to mankind.
Well, is it true or not that the legislature addressed an exemption for the machines within the plant boundaries?
No, I think what Mr. Domenico is referring to is legislation that was passed as a result of this very litigation.
Okay.
So because of this litigation and because the department had changed its position, and I just want to also comment on his claim that the department held a different position up to 2001. There's no record for that. There were no decisions of any kind by the department indicating how to treat electricity prior to 2001. But because they changed their position in 2005 with a new executive director's decision, the companies that had entered into long-term power purchase agreements by which they...
During that period when this interpretation was in place, right?
That's why the legislature said, look, for that group, we're going to say right now, because they entered into those agreements with certain assumptions and expectations, we're going to make sure they don't have to pay tax on their machinery. That's only for a short period of time. Now, the tax will begin to apply again for subsequent transactions if the court reverses. But it was only for that narrow subclass, and only so that they wouldn't be disadvantaged by virtue of the fact that they had entered into their contracts with these assumptions. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought.
Well, the legislature had an opportunity to take your position and doesn't seem to have.
Yes, I remember the point now, is that the legislature took great pains in that legislation, both in 2007 and then another piece of legislation in 2008, through a legislative declaration to say that they weren't attempting to decide whether or not those transactions already qualified for the exemption. They were merely trying to address what they perceived and described as an unfairness to those who had entered into transactions based upon the 2001 order. So it was very unique. The legislature said they were aware of this litigation, they weren't answering that question, and they recognized that those producers and all others might already have qualified for the exemption.
Ms. Parmes, I guess I want to ask you, let's assume for a second that that your discussion you've just given us fits the definition, or at least an interpretation of commodity, for a second. And you use the example of copper wire, the manufacturing process. Now, there's obviously a difference between public service company making available electricity to the state, which I'm sure you agree with. So, how do you get around the difference between the company that manufactures copper, and public service company, which manufactures an essential element for the state to function as a service?
Well, I don't see any difference.
You know, the service company should be treated like the guy that the copper manufacturing.
It's a precious. A critical commodity in the same way you might prepare a commodity.
You don't think it has special legislation and special rules and regulations to govern because it is a service?
You know, it has special rules and regulations, and for example, the PUC itself principally recognizes the commodity aspect of it, not the service aspect of it. When they
well, the whole reason we have a PUC is for the service, isn't it, fundamentally? Isn't that the fundamental reason?
I would say it's to...
To provide a service at a legitimate price for the public to use.
It's both. To regulate both the service and the commodity. And so when you see the three principal requirements that the charter that the company is allowed to impose, the two biggest ones that are authorized by the PUC are for the commodity. They're described as an electric commodity charge. The second one also uses the term commodity. And because they recognize that the principal nature of the transaction is a transfer of a commodity. There absolutely is a service component to it, but there's a
service component.
Well, you are charged for your electricity based on how much you use.
Of course.
Not I'm charged based upon how much I use, and it's based upon use of the commodity that we to choose to use.
But both of us being charged for a fundamental aspect of life, right?
But if we were both receiving just the same service, we'd pay the same amount. The reason why we're charged different amounts, we pay different amounts, is because we consume different amounts, like any other commodity. Absolutely, I agree, there's a service component, but...
Would you say it's a fundamental component?
I would say that fundamental electricity fits within the scope of the Department's regulation that defines tangible personal property, and the statutory definition of tangible personal property, and the fact that it has a service component doesn't defeat the fact that it also has a critical, essential commodity component, like the wood you buy for your stove, or the gas you use in your stove.
Thank you.
I guess there's a minute left.
Well, it's actually, you don't, but that's, you can finish up. We'll give Mr. Domenico if he wants extra time.
Okay, I will make one last point.
Sure.
The definition here of manufacturing refers to the manufacturer of a product, article, substance, or commodity. I think it's critical, I think it's significant to this case that the legislature used the word commodity in the list of products that will qualify for this exemption. Right. I think they acknowledged they intended that the preparation of a commodity, like natural gas, like electricity, in a marketable form, could also qualify for this exemption. Otherwise, it could have kept simply the references to product, substance, and that might have covered other types of goods that are manufactured. But they chose to use the word commodity as well, I think signaling their intent that commodities prepared by companies with complex machines so that they're in marketable form and can be used by consumers and to prepare commodities that otherwise would not exist, that also fits within the scope of manufacturing. I see my time is coming up.
It is all right. Do you have any other questions? You may wrap up.
Yeah, you just borrowed on credit.
That's all right.
Okay.
The time is a commodity.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
First, Mr. Domenico, we'll give you an extra 2 minutes and 45 seconds. If you want.
To begin with this discussion of commodity is not what's actually the limitation or what this exemption applies to. The legislature, as I pointed out at the very beginning, ties this exemption not to any commodity, not to any machinery, but to tangible personal property, which is in 104A, a separate tax from the tax on electricity. Now, to get to a couple of other...
Council, can I just clear that up?
Yes.
I guess, do you concede it's a commodity, it's just not an intangible corporal?
Sure.
And I mean, how much do you concede on that?
It is traded on commodities exchanges. But, and this goes to the entire interpretation of the regulation, sort of the facile approach to the regulation where it's just, well, if you can check the box on any of these, then we don't have to think about it anymore. It might be nice if sales tax or tax law were that simple. In fact, as this court has recognized repeatedly, it's not. One can describe, for example, a painting as a good, as a product, but this court has recognized that in some circumstances, it's nevertheless not tangible personal property. Same with a commodity. Yes, electricity is traded as a commodity. The economic definition that if you ask an economist what a commodity is, it's any good or service that someone will pay for. There's things called internet information technology services commodities. These are simply starting points. The regulation doesn't purport. It's never been interpreted or applied in a sort of unreasonable check-the-box manner that the plaintiffs suggest it should be here. The department interprets it as a starting point. It says what's embraced within this idea. It doesn't solve all of our problems. It just gives us a starting point. That's why no one has thought to challenge it. Reading it so broadly as the plaintiffs require the court to read it in order to prevail would pull within the sales tax. Remember, their broad reading of that regulation and their broad reading of the term tangible personal property would apply to the imposition of the tax in 104A. So suddenly, if a song now qualifies because that's a product or a good, so the band you hire
at your wedding is now selling you tangible personal property that you should be paying sales tax on. So this is the sort of direction that the plaintiffs would take it. This is why the court has wisely imposed the requirement that both imposition statutes and exemptions be read narrowly.
Could I ask you, since you raised those in several examples there, raised the sort of question of ideas or intellectual property or creative matter and how that's mixed, paintings, a song. But when we've dealt with those questions in the past, didn't we recognize that something can have a mixed quality? It can be tangible, but also part of it is something that's not tangible. And in those cases, didn't we kind of wrap ourselves into contortions trying to figure out some multi-factor test to decide how we're going to treat that? Neither one of you all seems to want to treat this situation just comparable to that.
Sure.
Either say it is or it is not.
Yeah, the sort of true object analysis.
Right.
And I think that's, you certainly should adopt that here. I don't think it's necessary to, again, because the legislature has specifically provided for how to treat electricity in the sales tax code. But if you don't agree, then certainly you could apply this multi-factor test. Would a reasonable person, for example, when they turn on their lights, think, I'm going to have public service ship me over some personal property? No, that's not how we consider what they provide us. Maybe some electrical engineers might think of it that way, but that's not how the average person thinks of it. So I think under that analysis, I think the court would have to reach the same conclusion.
Could I follow up real quick?
Sure.
Since you said that, and would we feel the same way about gas?
Well, look, yeah, I do need to hit on the gas distinction. The plaintiffs and the Court of Appeals made much of this stipulation 54. I really hope the court will look at the stipulations because that are, I think, around page 330 of the record. They don't say what the Court of Appeals took them to say, and they don't say what the plaintiffs said. What was said in stipulation 54 is that the department has treated gas as tangible personal property. Stipulation 55 explains that in a little more detail. It's not that it's always tangible personal property. It's not for purposes of these statutes. The department is fighting right now cases making that very argument. If you bottle up tangible personal property, yes, just like if you bottle water or you make a battery, it's tangible, can be tangible personal property. But the utility providing you natural gas, you're not taxed on it unless it qualifies under D1. You're not, and you're only taxed on it if it's put into this tangible corporeal form. So natural gas is treated by the department like electricity. And so, but it's
it
not
treated. Like it's bottled up, you're saying?
Well, I don't understand this.
Right, okay, so when you want to power your outdoor grill,
and what about when I want to power my house?
It is not treated as tangible personal property in those circumstances. It's taxed just like electricity under D1, not under A.
So are you saying only when it's contained in some way or can be?
That's my understanding. Now there's another exemption under in the enterprise zone tax that allows specifically provides for an exemption for natural gas processing in enterprise zones, but that's not really an issue here. So yes, when you pay for gas through a utility, it is only taxed under D1, not A. It is treated alike. And so the stipulations 54 and 55 have to be read more carefully, frankly, than the plaintiffs want them to be read. They don't say what the plaintiffs ask them to say.
What do they say?
They say 54 says the department has treated, doesn't say does treat, always treats, has treated natural gas as tangible personal property for purposes of the exemption. 55 says, explains what that means, that in limited circumstances under 709, what we're talking about here, it has treated it as tangible personal property. My understanding is that, and there, I believe, is a final decision from the 40s, I think, on this point, that it's bottled natural gas, the type you buy if you go and get a bottle of protein. propane.
You need them right now.
Tangible personal.
Now we're in the vitamin supplement.
I'm getting into chemistry now, I have biology, and I wanted to limit myself to physics. The regulation, again, I think it's important to realize just how broad the plaintiff's arguments would be if either the regulation or the statute is interpreted in the way that they suggest. We got down into a bit of a rabbit hole, which we see how quickly we get into this about electrons. Number one, they suggest that anything involving movement of matter qualifies. Again, a song, not the creative intellectual property part of it. A song involves sound waves moving the molecules of air through the room. A song is therefore fits their definition. Anything perceptible to the senses, they say, that involves matter qualifies. That is a remarkably broad sales tax we would have. It is a remarkably broad exemption that we would have. That is not what the legislature intended. The legislature, I think, we can credit them with some wisdom of recognizing that trying to deal with electricity as tangible property, personal property, is just a mess, as we saw here today. So they provided for it separately. The measurement of electricity is worth considering. It's by kilowatt hours. How much work? A watt is how much work the electricity does, related to sort of a service concept. Again, how much work you could have someone do. Now, they do it in an automated fashion, but that still doesn't change the fundamental nature from a product, from a service to a product. Finally, the electrons. They're not selling you electrons. The electrons that carry the charge are in the wiring you already bought and someone else manufactured. They're essentially exciting them in a way that allows the electricity to move through them. But altering the state of property I already own is a service, not a product. Thank you.
Thank you. Hearing no further questions, the case is submitted on the briefs. I want to thank both attorneys for their excellent briefs and arguments. The court will be in recess for about 15 minutes.